Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 215. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and along with me is Dr. Jonathan Fast. John, how you doing this week?
I am super groovy, my friend.
We hope to be joined by Lee Peel shortly, but we're going to start without her. She shows up late, fashionably, so that's how it tends to happen. But we do have a great show for you this week. You know what? You might have a super long show this week. You might have multiple mailbags. You might hear us talking about a lot of stuff because we've recorded like three in the last couple weeks, but I just haven't been able to put them up. I won't even make excuses. I just haven't put them up. There has been some other stuff that I've been doing, so that's that. But we've been recording them for the most part, and then you know it has been like Father's Day came up and like birthdays and stuff like that, Hallmark holiday type stuff. And John just didn't. He almost didn't want to do it anymore. He wanted more money.
Yeah, I wanted more money. There were some contract negotiations, and we had to have a federal ruling on that.
We went to arbitration, and all sides, I mean, we're pretty happy, I think. We're happy to still have him on the show.
Yeah. So there will be a full season of the FitCast.
There will. But we're only doing 13 episodes, and then we're wrapping it up. They're giving us 13 more episodes, then we're calling it quits. We just want to wrap up the storylines and give you guys a proper send off. So about 228 is about where we're going to be wrapping up.
And then I'll be working for Ricky Martin full time.
Yeah, dude, living the vita loca. So
that's right. You know, really, it's all of Menudo. It's all members of Menudo because, as we know, all members of Menudo speak with one voice.
Indeed, the cool thing. I just want to quickly mention is that we have an interesting discussion on like the latest Kinect games and some video game fitness stuff in the off topic if you want to join in, and also we talk about the Emmy Oscar Best Picture nominee Fast Five, which John has seen and we have both seen, so you can check that out. Let's take a, you know, John, I don't even think we should take a break. You want to go right to the mailbag?
That's crazy, and we didn't negotiate that. I want a new contract.
Okay. So the first thing that I want to bring up and make this – I want to make this like a mini FitCast Pulse segment, which I promise will be posted this week. It's even edited. It's sitting on my desktop right now. It's even been uploaded, so you can find it if you go to fitcast.com/podcast. It's there right now. Thing that I'm going to first make sure that I do is mute the Skype so John's messages don't pop up. The first thing I want to talk about is an article that popped up in the Boston Globe, my local paper, and I was just very lucky enough to have opened up the paper that morning and have seen this. So quick thing, it's just titled "School Set to Weigh In on Fitness." And this is crazy statistics that we always talk about, but you know, it kind of hits home when it's local. Excuse me. They start off with two of every five children in Boston's public schools weigh more than they should, but 30% of the district schools offer no physical education classes whatsoever. Now school administrators are promising to do more to bridge the gap between what is needed and what is available to address a health problem that has been declared a national crisis. The district yesterday announced that it will hire more physical education teachers so that 106 schools can offer PE. This year, only 94 of the district's 134 schools offered those classes. So they're not even going, you know, widespread, because one of the problems is some of these schools don't even have the facilities to have gym class, which is nuts.
Right.
You know,
that's amazing.
You would think everyone would have a basketball court, but sometimes, you know, especially in the cities, you know, the schools aren't necessarily as, you know, great as they tend to be in the suburbs. And I think the same thing can be said to based on where you live. Obviously, some states have more funding, or they just have, you know, a better educational system. And one quote that came from Jill Cotter Jill Carter, who is the executive director of the district's health and wellness development, so that if you want to improve academics of students, you also have to look at their health, because healthy children are better able to learn. We're dealing with achievement gaps that sort of overlap or in some way affected by health disparities. The district's finding that 40% of students are overweight or obese. They came from physical assessments. Students receive every 3 years in school. So, you know, at least they're keeping track of this stuff. They take a look at the kids every 3 years to kind of see where they are in terms of I mean, I'm sure it doesn't mention it, but they're probably using like BMI. So, you know, it might not be exact, but
well, for I don't know. Yeah, the BMI, that'd be an interesting question, because BMI really – the biggest issue, of course, is when you're dealing with muscle mass. With kids, you wouldn't have that problem, but I don't know.
Exactly.
Right. I don't know what the research is for kids in BMI, though. That's the other thing. You can't just say, okay, I'm just going to do BMI on children if – the research has all been done on adults, so that would be the other problem. But I would assume that – I mean, I know that I want to say that I've seen some youth research where they've used BMI, but I would be completely lying if I said I had any real handle on youth exercise research. So.
Well, again, I'm going to just quickly wrap up and just you know, following up on one of the previous statements I made, just to give you a better idea. They said, because space is an issue at many schools, about half have no gymnasium, said Carter. And, you know, this you know, brings up the discussion, you know, do we start making the classroom a place for exercise? But probably not. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't seem very I mean, especially when it comes to like doing stuff that will cause you to sweat, you know, sweating in a classroom, then sitting back down and going back to work. But I swear I've seen like editorials on TV where like schools in China, where they're in Japan, where they regularly have like the kids get up and exercise right in the middle of class. I might be crazy, but I swear I've seen that.
You know, it's a tough thing, because especially with children, you're not just dealing with – I mean, we're looking at it from the standpoint of obesity and this unbelievable statistic of childhood type 2 diabetes and things that just were completely unfathomable even, you know, 20, 30 years ago. But – so there is an importance with just the idea of getting kids to move and be active, controlling diet and things like that, so that they're healthy. But there's a huge part of it where gameplay and sports and athletics and things like this, they're part of skill acquisition. They're part of motor programming and learning. And it's a vital – there's a reason why children play and why everything in the animal world plays. It's more than just this kind of fun thing that kids do. There's physiological reasoning for this. So that's a big, big problem when schools are no longer either having the time or facilities to teach sport and involve kids in exercise. And I think more than any time before, the assumption is that parents will put kids in, you know, little leagues or whatever, which was always the norm, but now it's like a requirement because they're not doing anything in school. And that's just not – that's just not a great idea. You know, it's a scary concept that we're changing so much as a society that we're devaluing a child's ability to move and play and to learn sports and really to just be kids. It's not all about learning how to program a computer at by age, you know, 8.
Sounded like you were still continuing that thought a little bit.
No, I don't know. It's a scary thing.
Well, the other thing I wanted to, you know, quickly bring up is, you know, you talk about the change in how our society is, and, you know, you can quickly just walk into a hospital or walk into an office building and see that, you know, we talk about all the time how almost everyone is sitting at a desk right now. Everyone, you know, the way all of our work is these days is usually done at a desk, whether it be at a computer or doing some kind of administrative work. For most people out there, that's how it is. And you see everyone who's sitting at a desk, they tend to, you know, lead towards the side of being overweight And, you know, you see these other jobs where people are moving around a lot. Like, this is a odd example, but I was just at the animal hospital the other day, and everyone who is sitting down at a desk doing administrative work, you know, probably would have all been classified as overweight or obese, and all the doctors were in really good shape. And these are vets. Like, they're just but they're always moving. Like, they are constantly walking from, you know, one room to another, and always on their feet. So, you know, clearly that has something to do with it.
Well, there was just an article that was actually in the New York Times, you know, quoting a research article where the researchers, you know, the theory is that as a society, we've slowed down, we don't move as much as we used to anymore. But what the researchers in this specific article were able to do was to actually quantify the amount of calories that the average worker has lost, is no longer burning throughout the day as compared to, you know, the more manual or physical labor that we used to do, you know, I think it was like 50, 60 years ago, whatever it is. And what's fascinating was that those numbers matched up almost exactly to how much, you know, calories we eat more or gain more on average per day, and, you know, which has created this obesity risk. It was really interesting. Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, that right there was just fascinating. It's like, if on average we're intaking 150 calories more a day, that study found that we're not burning 150 calories that we used to.
Yeah,
and that was really interesting. It's not like, yeah, it was very interesting.
Let's go on to a question that we got from Facebook.
Okay.
Do you want to read that, or do you want me to read that?
Sure. We're doing the MMA one?
Yeah.
Okay. Ryan wrote, we sent out a last second, we're recording now, give us your questions kind of thing. And Ryan said that, asked, what are your thoughts on the growing trend of athletes doing MMA workouts? I've heard Coach Boyle's thoughts on it. I'd like to hear your take on it. Keep up the great work, guys. And that was from Ryan. Kevin, you want to talk a little bit, and actually, you know, Mike's opinion, maybe give that first since he was referenced.
Yeah, Mike actually, you know, again, quick plug. You can see this video. I'm sure you saw it on Body by Boy online, but we actually got this question. You know what? I'll see if I can post it on the in the show notes just for you guys to kind of check it out, but. More or less, you know, Mike wasn't, you know, a huge fan, especially when it came to doing like all the ropes, all the rope work and the, you know, the strongman circuits and stuff like that. Part of the reasons is logistics of putting together a program, where you're going to be doing these exercises, especially like I walked into Mike Boyle Strength and Conditioning this morning and the place was packed. There was no room to be doing any kind of rope work, farmers walks, like stuff like that, without causing some kind of logistical issues. So whenever you know you get an answer from Mike, you have to keep that in mind. Where a lot of the stuff that he's doing is going to be with groups with about like 10 to 12 people, roughly. So take that for what you will. But again, I think. It's fancy stuff. It's very much in like the CrossFit sense of things, depending on how you do it. Saying that you're doing MMA workouts is such a general term, which it doesn't really describe what you're doing, because Kyle Holland, who is one of the strength coaches at Mike Boyle Strength and Conditioning, we're just talking about this on Saturday. He was talking to me about a you know, one of the pretty prominent strength coaches that is, you know, works in the UFC with UFC fighters in the program that he does. And I can actually say this because he had an article about it. But he said, you know, this guy is going to be fighting someone who is 205 pounds. So we do everything with 205 pounds. So we bench 205 pounds as many reps as possible. We, you know, squat 205 as many reps as possible. We overhead press 205 reps as many times as possible. We deadlift 205 as many times as possible. And that's their training. That's MMA training. So, you know, okay, that's one side of things. If you want to say like, oh, no, you're just doing like the rope work, you're doing like lots of kettlebell stuff, and it's more of like a, you know, you're just doing some metabolic training type stuff. All right, that's fine, but you got to kind of look at where this fits into your program. If you're an athlete training for a sport or training for the upcoming season, or I mean, if you're in season, I think MMA stuff or even like a lot of that metabolic work has to go out of the window because you're already getting a lot of that stuff from just games. But if you're in your off season, again, how much benefit are you going to get out of this stuff that you can't get from like a very, you know, structured weight training program with, you know, proper conditioning, you know, conditioning that would be applied to your sport. I don't think you should train to be an MMA fighter unless you're an MMA fighter. If you're one of those dudes walking into the local gym with a tap-out shirt, it's cool, man. I love that you like the MMA. Like, I'm not an MMA fan, but, like, then trying to train as an MMA fighter and making everything look horrible, which, you know, a lot of times is the case when you're not being coached, I think it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. I think, I mean, I pretty much agree with you. I mean, exactly, like, the most...
Don't agree with me.
Training...
We need some kind of, like, I'm going to be... For the next question, I'm going to be the...
The good cop, bad cop?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, then, okay, then I'll disagree with you. But, I mean, there was going to be a little bit of disagreement. I'm fine with GPP stuff.
Sure.
If you're... Yeah, and I think that's
a whole different realm.
Right, and I think... But I think that's what people think of... When they think of training like an MMA fighter, mm-hmm. like, are we talking about, you know, because an MMA fighter, you know, rolls in the cage, does stand up, does boxing, does, you know, and you could do all that stuff too, but then you're training to be an MMA fighter. That's fine too. If you want to learn how to, you know, fight like an, you know, MMA, that's great. If you want to do like the, you know, the 300 workout or, you know, GPP stuff or CrossFit or whatever, that's great too. It's all just based on goals, whatever that might be.
But I think if you're looking at this question,
And if you're an athlete, I still don't see a problem with it. Off season, no problem. Go to town if you want to do off season stuff. Because that's, you know, just general kind of fitness anyway. I know that there are a lot of athletes that use MMA training as part of their workouts, and I don't have a problem with that either so much. And again, if we're talking about like GPP, there, and from the things that I've read, I've read some stuff about some baseball players that are using MMA, and they're actually they're you know, boxing and kickboxing and wrestling a little bit more of the drills and actual contact stuff, but they feel that it gives them advantage. They feel that it adds to their overall fitness and ability and athleticism. I don't have a problem with that either, because if the athlete says that this is doing, you know, a good deal for them, go for it. But again, you do have to look at your type of sport, your position, and where this may be beneficial or not. I think that you have to always weigh, you know, risk reward. So if you're doing something that's possibly aggressive, I mean, quite frankly, MMA guys get hurt in training all the time, but they're doing a lot of contact drills. So if you're not doing those contact drills, then I would assume that your risk of injury is probably decreased. And if you feel like you need a certain base of fitness level, I don't have a problem with that. And I don't really even necessarily have an argument either. But I do think that as an athlete, you do have to remember that your sport demands are going to have to receive priority. So if you're doing GPP style training, you know, 5-6 days a week, and you're really not working on any of the sport specific skills and strength required, you're probably missing something. But if you're, you know, you've got a couple of drills that you do, or 1 or 2 days out of the week that you're doing this kind of conditioning work, and you feel like it's assisting in your game, I don't have a problem with that specifically at all.
Yeah, you know, I think it's like, I kind of look at it, you know, the more that I work at Boyle's, I kind of get, you know, a general mindset, because I see how things kind of work there, and, you know, clearly the way things are done there work extremely well. We have a you know, a great, you know, clientele of athletes that have gone on to do, you know, amazing mm-hmm. things, and, you know, I just think if you have to program with a purpose. And if you're programming for basketball, and you're doing MMA stuff instead of, you know, making sure you're doing your plyometrics and stuff like that, I think that's a problem. If you have some extra time and you want to just do it for fun, like, you know, if it's like a Sunday and you, you know, didn't have much to do and you want to like do some circuit stuff, like that's cool. Like that's, you know, it's awesome, but don't make your programming suffer because you want to do some MMA stuff. That's all I would say.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I mean, you have to, again, it's just priorities. And if you have room or time to do some of that stuff, that's great. But if you're an athlete and you don't, or it's an in-season or whatever it is, there may be some difficulty in doing that. But then again, you know, there's no single right way. So just like you said, like, you know, Boyle gets some amazing results, and absolutely. And, you know, we could name a lot of coaches that get amazing results, and we'll see a lot of similarities and a couple differences. And there's no, I guess, evidence to suggest that one way is necessarily better than the other. Although we could certainly identify the methodologies that appear to do better than anything else. But there's a lot of room within those methodologies. So throwing in something like some of that type of like randomized training, or, you know, MMA specific training, we don't know if it's better or worse. And anecdotally, there are some professional athletes that feel that it's better. But, you know, back in the day, there was a lot of stuff like this. They'd have, you know, football players that, you know, participated in judo training, and, you know, a lot of different things like that. They do this kind of mixed athletic type of training, and anecdotally, many of them felt that it was helpful to their game. So we talk about that too in youth training. You know, we've talked about the idea of not specializing when you're young. Well, maybe you shouldn't specialize as much when you're older either. Not to say that you shouldn't become proficient in your sport, but maybe there's some room even there too. So who knows?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some room, but I think I didn't know where I was going with that, so I'm going to just cut it off right there. I had something that I was going to say. I'm like, oh, I'm going to just going to back it up with this. But anyways, let's go to the next question that we got in the mailbag. And this is from Nigel from Manchester, England. So I'm going to read this in an English accent. I'm just kidding. Hi, everyone. It's Nigel from Manchester with a question for Dr. Fass. You've helped me enormously over the years in my recovery with various symptoms arising from a low back injury, and here is the latest. When doing Bulgarian split deadlifts with my – and I think he means split squats.
I don't know. I'm not sure, because there is a Bulgarian split deadlift.
What is it?
It's a Bulgarian split deadlift. You take the weight from the floor with your – opposite leg elevated.
Okay. Oh, no, yeah. I've seen that, but I haven't heard it called a Bulgarian split deadlift.
Yeah.
All right. And I'm getting pain in the trailing rear leg. So rather than tiring out with the weight-bearing front leg, I'm giving up due to the pain in my back supporting leg. The only possible related condition I can find on the net is TFL problems, which could have come from me avoiding using my right side during my recovery from the back injury. Any expert advice from yourself would be greatly appreciated. Love the new show format. Cheers, Nigel. P.S. Put out a goddamn episode. Love the new format until they stop coming.
Love the new format. Now let's see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? It's there could be a lot of reasons for this, and the biggest question that I have, you know, unfortunately, I don't know where the pain is. If it's towards the back of the leg, I would suspect that it could be coming from the spine, and then either the spine or maybe even like a piriformis syndrome. But the back of the leg, I guess generally assume with a history of back pain that might be something like the sciatic nerve. Or, you know, and again, either from a back-related issue with usually that's a disc bulge, or it could be piriformis syndrome, where the piriformis muscle tightens around the nerve can pass through the muscle itself. But either way, there's pressure from that muscle. And that may come from, like, glute activation issues or overuse of the hips in relation to the back because of pain and altered walking, all kinds of stuff. The fact that he's saying it's coming from a Bulgarian, and we'll assume that that's what he was describing, is that his back leg is elevated. I'm suspecting that it's actually – he's talking about the front of the leg. And this the most obvious two issues that may come from that, you may have some shortening or tightness or whatever of your hip flexors. And it could be the psoas, it could be the rectus, it could be, you know, anything, or, you know, or the quads themselves, because of the position of the leg in a Bulgarian or just a general split squat. So you may look into more stretching and mobility work for your hip flexors, and that could take care of it right there. The other issue, though, could be your actual strength in the lead leg, not the trail leg, so the leg that you're that is actually stuck to the floor. So if you do, this is where single leg work comes in, and this is the importance of single leg work. If there's weakness through the hips or through the leg, you're going to have less stability on the weaker leg than you will on the stronger leg. You might kick the hips out a little bit more, or you might have some more internal rotation at the leg. The ankle may be weak as well, and therefore you're going to unwittingly try to stabilize yourself or put more of the stress through that trailing leg than you would otherwise want to. You know, usually we say something like an 80-20 or 70-30 split, something like that, especially in a Bulgarian split squat. So you really want to use that back leg for just sort of minimal balance. But if you don't have good balance, you're just going to be overusing it. And when you're in that position, the leg doesn't have that rear leg doesn't have a lot of strength to give. And what you're really doing is you're cramping your leg because you're trying to overuse the back leg and without the stability, the support, or the strength to do so. So that might be another reason why you're getting pain. So if it's not coming from the spine, and if it is, that's really something that you should have someone take a look at, although plenty of times the press-up exercise, which is basically like a de-sitting exercise, may be helpful in that case. But that's a general kind of, you know, just sort of stretch everything out type of move. It's like a cobra in yoga. But you can't really say that that's going to help because although it's that most people respond to that, there are plenty that respond in the opposite direction. There are plenty that respond to side bending. So you have to really have someone take a look at you and decide that that's what's going to work for you. But otherwise, I would, again, suggest either stretching out the hip flexor and the quads and or looking at the strength disparity and possibly that you're really just not having a good time because the leg that's in front is weak and has poor control. If that's the case, then you need to look to strengthen the hip on that side, on the side of the lead leg, strengthen glutes, strengthen, you know, you can do things like expand walks and, you know, all those types of recovery and prehab sort of activation drills and get your body moving more symmetrically so that you don't have balance issues and you don't have strength issues.
Well, cool. Hopefully, Nigel, that helps out quite a bit. Again, we're kind of hoping that Lee was going to have a chance to drop back in, and we're obviously recording on a day that we don't normally do it. So it doesn't look like that will be the case, but you know, we will have some, you know, great stuff coming up this week. We do have a couple episodes in the bag, so you should have.
I propose we have a contest, what in the world is Lee doing contest for the listeners.
I know exactly what she's doing.
Yeah, we know, but let's give a contest to the listeners, like most creative reason why Lee isn't on this week.
All right. Are we going to make this interesting?
Sure.
All right. I will give someone 6 months of Body by Boyle Online Web Edition.
Ooh.
That's a $250 value.
Whoa. That is awesome. John. And I'll tell you who I work for.
Actually, this is a double thing where John's actually been working for Mike the whole time.
Right, the whole time.
That's the secret boss. He's actually been with me in Boston, and we're sitting next to each other.
Yep.
But our internet is so terrible.
Kevin, stop touching me.
John, stop taking off your pants. That's gross. No, John, put your clothes back on. It's not funny anymore. All right, this is why we don't do the streaming video. All right, so thanks, everyone, for listening. Don't forget to check out theficast.com. And make sure if you want to get on some of these like Insta, you know, ask question things, make sure that you're friends with John and I on Facebook. You can find both of us. We are not secret people. John needs more friends on Facebook. I feel bad that I have more friends than John on Facebook because I shouldn't.
Yep.
John is a much better person than I am. It makes no sense whatsoever.
But you were on Facebook a lot sooner, so half those people are actually people that you met in school.
I was. I'm from a younger generation where we understand technology a little bit better. And
right.
That is that's good for everyone. The other thing I will quickly mention is that we have a great off topic coming up. We have a pulse that I swear to God will be up on Friday. If not beforehand, you know, I'll probably just put it up Wednesday just to shove it in everyone's face. It's recorded. It's edited. It's sitting on my desktop right now. It says June 16th, 2011 that it was edited on. So it was edited on Thursday, but I just never got it out. But that will be it for us. You can stick around and listen to the off topic, or we will see you next time. Thanks for listening, everyone. And we appreciate you, hanging in there with us as we were kind of MIA for the last couple weeks. And I appreciate all the kind comments that a lot of the listeners sent to me on Facebook over the last 2 weeks. I really appreciate that. And a quick dog update. Marty is doing quite well. He's dealing with the treatment. We're just, trying to keep a puppy quiet, which is quite a bit of work. So we're going to continue to do that. But again, thank you for everyone that is, sent stuff, whether it be email or Facebook or Twitter. Really appreciate it. You guys are the best, best fans and listeners that we could possibly ask for, especially if you're from Australia. And yes, you know what? I can't say archive.
Whatever. No, you couldn't.
You free? I got it.
Archive.
Yeah. Archive.
That was amazing.
Like the spice. Archives.
Where are chives?
That's a level in Goldmine. Archive. Alright, hello and welcome to the off-topic discussion. I'm with Dr. Jonathan Fass, or his men's health forum name is Bipennate.
No, you're correct, actually. That's true.
Yep. So if you want to search for his old forum posts back in the day.
Right. Back in the day, everything is probably wrong and stupid.
What's the best bicep curl?
I think the best one is the one that you aren't doing.
You got to change it up every 3 to 4 weeks. Muscle confusion.
That's right.
Well, we are here for some off-topic stuff. And since we more or less did, we kind of did this last night when we talked on Skype, maybe we should just rekindle that a little bit.
Sure.
One thing I wanted to quickly mention shortly. Let's do a video game segment. So I'm like I was telling John, and I actually talked to Roger Lawson on the telephone today, and he's very happy that I'm starting to lean towards the PlayStation side of things. Because now, and this is weird, like I actually had someone come up to me at the Perform Better seminar and say, didn't even ask me a fitness related question, said, what console should I get?
That's awesome.
So they clearly listened to the off topic discussion. Not like, oh, let's talk some shop. I'm thinking about getting a game console. What should I get?
Right. Good deal.
Yeah, so the thing that I wanted to talk a little bit about here is that we're 5 years into the PlayStation 3's life, believe it or not. We're almost 5 years into it.
Wow.
Coming up this October or November. So, and it's taken 5 years for that console to be like the better, have the better version of games on it.
Well, I think that that's
no, that's accurate.
That's up. No, I don't know about all of that.
No, it is. I can prove it.
Prove it.
There's plenty of websites that do like comparisons to show you like what's the better version of game, like based on like the visuals, the audio quality,
load times. Oh, for each game. Okay, that's fair.
Like they go, they do head to heads, and it's like nice forum discussion type stuff. So, you know, I've been putting off getting LA Noire just because I haven't really had a lot of time to play games lately, and I've reached a point in my life where I won't buy anything unless it's like under $20 now. it makes sense. I mean, a lot of these games where you can, if you don't want, if you don't need it day one, if you wait like a month or two, you can usually get it for like $30.
Totally. Yeah.
That's
all I do anyway.
Exactly. That's what John's been doing. And John, like you basically came back, like, you know, a month or two ago and you did that.
Yeah. I bought like six games. I just bought in bulk, and I think I probably spend like an average of like $20-25 each.
Yeah, so it's so I've been trying to do that, and I've been picking up things like whether it's at like Target clearance section or sometimes on Amazon, something will pop up and you'll see someone post it on Twitter. But anyways, Toys R Us had this like had a bunch of games where you could buy two for $50, and what I get, one of it's Fear 3, which doesn't even come out for like another 2 weeks, but it was already, you could get a, you know, buy two of these games for $25. So I bought LA Noire on the PS3, which is,
I've heard good things.
The game is amazing. I actually got to play it for about 2 or 3 hours yesterday, and it's vastly different than like the Grand Theft Autos. If you have kids, don't let them play this game. Straight up, this is a very adult oriented game. It's something where we're getting we're getting towards much closer to the life of the medium, where you get much more adult oriented stuff that's not like adult by like you go to a strip club, but more adult like adult stories and situations where there's gruesome murders or like rapes and stuff like that that you're investigating. And, you know, there's some very, you know, I don't want to spoil anything because that's basically what the game is. It's all stories, and you are a detective and you're trying to figure out, you know, who's lying, and you're trying to, you know, find out who done it. And it's a real breath of fresh air because it all takes place in the 1940s, right after World War II in Los Angeles. They recreated 1940s Los Angeles almost mile for mile, like yard for yard. And it took them 6 years to do this, so you can kind of tell that they definitely did some cool stuff. But if you go online and you take a look at some of the videos for this, they're big. I don't want to call it a gimmick, but their big, you know, thing that they've been talking about is their facial animations, and their facial animations will blow you away. It's the most incredible thing that you've ever seen because they, you know, it's not a puppet opening and closing its mouth. They actually put, I think it was like 100 sensors on each actor's face, which they use like all Hollywood actors, like the whole cast of Mad Men is basically on this game, and like Greg Grunberg from Heroes. And for some reason, I love that dude. I don't, whatever he's in, like he's always,
was that the cop on Heroes? The one that could read? Yeah.
He's totally like, you know, a cool dude. And if you actually like check his stuff out on Twitter, he's very much like he's just like a regular guy, which is always fun to root for those guys. But
I just saw him on a CNBC special about apps, iPhone apps.
Yeah,
and he has
his
like
own app.
Yeah.
He
was an angel investor. I think he was an angel investor. Yeah.
And it's the big thing that made me end up getting it on PS3 is it's on three discs on Xbox 360, and compared to one Blu-ray. But the thing on top of that is all the cinematics are much higher quality on the PS3 because they have much more room on the disc.
Right.
And it's not like a thing of laziness. Like I used to always, Like when I worked at Game Trailers, they announced Final Fantasy 13 while I was working there, that it was coming out on Xbox. And again, at the time, like I was a big Xbox guy because Sony was doing everything wrong. Like they were just making dumb decision after dumb decision. You know, I was talking with a lot of the guys in the office and like, oh, dude, I'm just going to buy this on Xbox just to, you know, rub it in everyone's face because it's like the first time it's ever shown up on Xbox. And then they end up interviewing the people that are making the game at that E3. And like, yeah, it's going to be on three discs opposed to one Blu-ray. And then we end up finding out that, you know, again, all the cinematics were lower quality on the Xbox just to fit it across all those discs. And I'm like, oh, you guys are just lazy. You don't want to get up and change your discs. And, you know, sure, that might be something, but it's really not about that. It's about convenience and it's about quality. I'm an HD, you know, freak. I need things to always be the best quality possible. When I, you know, people ever look at like Body by Boy online, like I spent about 3 days straight playing with dozens of different settings for video quality to see, like, to maximize the video quality for the amount of the file size. So the like I said, I really don't want to talk about the game that much because it's something that everyone should play. But interestingly enough, when I went to pick it up at Toys R Us yesterday, there was a father in there with his son, and he was getting in on this promotion too. His son, a couple of the games were like Call of Duty Black Ops. It's a pretty rough game, but it's, you know, it's mostly just shooting dudes. And like Portal 2 was one, and Mortal Kombat, and then L.A. Noire were the four games that you could choose from. And the kid gets Call of Duty. And this is a kid who is probably, if I would have to guess, I would say he's about 8 or 9 years old.
Okay.
And his dad is buying him Call of Duty Black Ops. You know, the person at Toys R Us is being great. He's be like, yeah, we just need to let you know that there's, you know, mature violence in this. There's people getting shot. There's lots of blood. You know, it's a pretty violent game. It's like, oh, what? Yeah, you know, I it's okay. You know, I've seen him play this stuff. And then he ends up like going and going back to the games because she's like, oh, well, you know, you can get a second game and it will only be $50. It won't even be $40. So for like 10 bucks more, you can get two games instead of just one. So the father brings him back there and he's like choosing between L.A. Noire and actually there was a fifth game, Brink, which is, you know, not very violent. It's, again, it's just a shooting game. You know, it is definitely violent, but compared to something like L.A. Noire, where there are, you go to crime scenes and there's fully nude women like that are beaten to death. Like, that's pretty graphic. Geez. Yeah, no, yeah. It's again, it's very much like almost like L.A. Confidential. If you've seen that, it's that level of graphic content. And so I'm actually like still looking there. I'm still like kind of choosing some stuff. There was like a bargain bin, so I was looking through there. And the kid didn't know the difference between them. And the father came up to me and he goes, oh, you know, which one of these games is better between Brink and L.A. Noire? And I'm like, oh, you know, for him, he's probably going to enjoy Brink a little bit more because the L.A. Noire stuff is just stories and all this stuff. And like, I didn't know, like, I honestly wanted to say, like, yeah, you know, you probably shouldn't be buying your kid.
Mm. See, that's just, I mean, I guess to each his own. But again, you know, I mean, I agree with you. That's you really, especially now. I mean, I have to say now more than ever before, you really have to know what your kids are getting involved in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's, you really got to do your research on what video games they're playing and blah, 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 because it's like, I mean, there are games that are just unbelievable. Like, you know, I mean, I was telling you, I just got God of War 3 talking about like $20 games. Oh my God, is that thing violent?
I mean, it's a scene where you have to like literally manipulate the buttons to have sex with like,
women. That was in all of them. Yeah. That was in all of them. So it's like, if you're not doing your due diligence here, your kid's basically, you know, he's getting his first taste of porno. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely. And it's,
And there's nudity throughout the video game, and there's just unbelievable violence. You're ripping people's heads off and, like, unbelievable stuff. I mean, I think it's cool, but, you know, I'm not an eight, I mean, an eight-year-old kid would think it's even cooler, but, you know, you got to do your homework on these things.
But I think the, you know, the thing that you kind of have to mention is that the companies, the game companies themselves are making it as easy as possible to decipher this stuff. If you look at the back of any game, there's a strict list of everything that's included in the game. Like, it will say graphic violence, you know, nudity, it will say sexual situations, language, it will say all that stuff. And it's like, you know, all this dad had to do was flip the box and take a look at it. But he didn't care either way. Like, the associate was literally saying, like, yeah, you know, there's, I mean, the problem with this discount is every single one of the games in this deal was an M-rated game. And it was, I swear to God, this kid was at the max 10 years old. And I think the craziest thing I played when I was in fourth or fifth grade, I bought $1, I bought a shareware version of Duke Nukem 3D at the Babbage's at the mall. And I felt like I was playing that when there was no one at home because it was like, there's strippers in the game.
Right.
But it obviously didn't look like it. It looked like worse than cartoon quality. Like, it looked terrible. You could barely even make anything out. But even then, it's like, man, I couldn't play that stuff around. I even feel weird playing L.A. Noire at my parents' house. I'm like, just uncomfortable.
Man. Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, I think the bottom line is, just like you said, it's a rating system just like a movie is. So if you wouldn't let your kid, you know, see a sexually violent film, don't let them play those video games, you know, because that's exactly the same thing that they're getting. It's too much.
The last thing I want to quickly talk about, and I'd love to get your take on this, John, is the I don't know if you've seen a lot of the stuff that came out of, you know, we'll kind of keep this like a strictly gaming thing. And for E3, I think it was last week now, or it was 2 weeks ago. The at E3, they obviously the big thing is motion gaming, and I was very surprised. A lot of Microsoft stuff that they had at their press conference was Kinect based, which is their you know, their camera system, and they had tons of these are games where you're moving around, you're very active. A lot of them were oriented towards kids, including a Star Wars game where I'm pretty sure it takes place in, like, unfortunately, like, us adults, we all hate episodes 1 through 3 for the most part. Yeah. And this game's based on the Clone Wars, which is, like, extremely popular among kids. But the you know, there was a whole game on that where you're, like, you know, you're using your arms, you're moving your arms around, like you're holding a lightsaber, you're dashing forward, you're, like, lunging forward, and you're picking guys up, like, you're using all these Jedi stuff. That was one of them. There was a whole Kinect Sports Season 2 where you can play football, where you're running in place. There was even this new game, Child of Eden, which this is going to be super. The, like, three people on this whole podcast are going to know what I'm talking about. But if you ever played, like, Lumines or Rez, those are like very much like music oriented games. This one, you actually, like, use your arms to shoot and stuff like that. And again, it's, you know, it's getting kids off the couch. And I think, like, it's really cool. I mean, as much as I don't want to play these games because I think they look stupid, you know, for kids, like, they're going to love this. It was a Sesame Street game that looked like, if I was a kid and I could play that game, I would be all over it.
Right.
And it just, I don't know. Did you get to see any of this Kinect-based stuff?
I've seen some Kinect stuff. I haven't seen the games that you're talking about, but I've seen Kinect. I know what it is. Absolutely.
All right. Well, that's the end of the conversation, I guess. All right. Okay. So, I don't know, John, did you get to see any movies, or are we going to wrap this up?
Did I see any movies? Not since the trip, so no. I haven't seen anything since. Trip. Right. Yeah. I told you, I saw Fast Five.
It's a great movie.
Dude, it's fun.
I told
you. It was a lot of fun. It was so...
Oh, yeah, we can talk about this since Lee wasn't here. So stop listening if you don't want to hear about Fast and Furious 5. stop listening right now. I'm giving you 5 more seconds to stop whatever you're listening to. So we, John and I, want to talk to about this for the people who either don't care or have seen it.
All right. Right. And while they're waiting, we can give a rest in peace to Ryan Dunn, the Jackass star. You heard about that?
Sad, man.
Yeah, it's sad.
It's amazing he would die in a car crash and not doing one of the Jackass stunts. It's unbelievable.
Right, exactly. It's amazing that his job was safer than normal life. Mm-hmm. And it's sad.
All right, so what did you think?
Dude, it was awesome. It was a lot of fun. It was,
there wasn't one second of downtime in that movie.
No, there wasn't 1 second of downtime. And what was really funny is, it's like every review you read, I agreed with them 100%. It's like, be prepared to, just suspend all laws of physics and, common human experience, and then you'll have a great time. And it's like, yeah, that's pretty much it.
I mean, that, like I said, these are the kind of movies that are like the Crank movies, the Transporter movies, where it's balls to the walls. It is nonstop action. There's no boring. There's no words that I can't understand.
Is really half the dictionary.
But the thing is that this is just – it's the kind of media that I consume. I don't want to go see The King's Speech. I'm sure it's a great movie. I have no interest in ever seeing
it. Oh, my God. That was a great movie.
See? I know it is. I understand that it is, but I never want to see it. Fast Five, I am very pumped about, and I've already pre-ordered it on Amazon. It just went up on pre-order last week, so you can order it on Blu-ray and DVD. But you did not stay for after the credits, John, did you?
I think that I forgot that, although I looked it up, and so I found out what you were talking about, but I think that I left before.
Okay, so if you've seen the news, they just recently announced Fast and the Furious 6. And it's going to be...
It did, okay.
It's announced. They have a script, the guy working on the script right now. And this Fast 5 had the... It made more in its opening weekend than Fast and Furious 4 did the whole time it was out in theaters.
Yeah, it did.
It was hugely successful. Only, a complete moron would not make another one of these movies. It's you keep making them until you just keep milking the cow. And this cow just got a shot of something because it's got tons of milk left in it.
And this is the super cows.
This is the super cow. It just grew new otters. Otters?
Right.
Otters. So anyways, if you stayed for after the credits in Fast and the Furious 5, you would see that Eva Mendes, who... God's gift to man.
Pretty much, yes. You are not incorrect.
She is walking through a warehouse and goes into an office where The Rock is sitting, and she goes, "I think you're going to want to take a look at this." And she throws a file onto the table. He's like, "No, I don't." He's like, "No, trust me. You're going to want to take a look at this." And he opens up the file, and you don't see what's in the file. He's like, "Is this a joke?" She's like, "No." And then they kind of pan over and they open up the file, and it's
Michelle Rodriguez.
Michelle Rodriguez, and she's alive.
Yeah.
She's alive after we thought she was presumed dead. So technically, the messed up part about this is Fast and Furious 6 is going to take place before Tokyo Drift.
Yeah, that's what I heard. It's funny because when you told me about, you're like, "Oh, did you stay for the credits?" I'm like, "Crap, no." So I looked it up, and then I was looking at the the timeline of everything, and I'm like, it's all screwed up. Everything is all over the place.
And 2 never happened. 2 doesn't never happen. Nope.
No, 2 happened because that's why they had Ludacris and
– I know. Tyrese?
Tyrese, yeah.
No, but in my mind.
And Eva Mendes. Well, maybe not.
Eva Mendes. She can show up. She can be retconned into anything. But I'm so pumped. Even if I don't care about Paul Walker so much, but if Vin Diesel isn't in it, and if we can get Han in there somehow, just bring him back to life, or like Lee and I were kind of talking about before I saw it, I bet he just crawled out of the back of the car and they just drove away. They didn't see his body ever. And he was so good in Fast Five. And we found out why he's always chewing on stuff. He's always chewing on food because he used to smoke cigarettes.
Oh, yeah.
So when I saw that, like, I looked at Roger in the theater. I'm like, I said, F you. I said that.
Wow. Like, wow.
Audibly. And he had no idea what I'm talking about, but I had to say it to someone. All right. So Fast 6 coming in 2012, hopefully. Then get off off their butts. We can get that by fall or winter 2012, and we can go from there. So, all right, why don't we wrap this up? We got 22 minutes of off topic. That's what happens when you don't record a show for 3 weeks. And
yes, sir.
We will do a podcast.